¡Sorpresa!
¡Hi!
¿Qué pasó, pasó, pasó?
I know. What's going on? It's Wednesday night and Latinos Who Lunch is on the air.
Girl, the power of the new moon follows us.
Super moon! Yes! So, I don't know if you've heard, but Favi Fav, that's me, Justin Favela, that's my name, that's my given name.
Yes, pues ya sabemos.
Yeah, I know, but
continúa.
To like say things. What if this is the first time somebody's tuned in, you know what I
mean? Oh, hi girl, hi. Welcome.
I'm part of Untitled Art Fair in beautiful Miami, Florida. Thanks to David B. Smith Gallery.
Shout out to David B. Smith Gallery.
Shout out to David B. Smith Gallery.
Yes.
They're in booth A3, and I have some artwork there with another artist, Penelope Umbrico. I think that's how you say your name. Umbrico? Umbrico?
Yes.
Yes. And I'm just so excited to be part of that art fair. I've never been part of a big art fair like this before. And not only am I part of it, but so is
Latinos Who Lunch. Ay, qué belleza.
So if you were in Miami today and you heard us on the radio, that's because guess what, Mimi? We were on the radio, on WynnWoodRadio.com. And we played a really special episode. And guess what? Today, here tonight, we have it for you. So this is a special Untitled Radio edition of Latinos Who Lunch. Fuck.
Te pasas de vergas, güey. Apágalo y continúa con tu comercial.
I never leave my phone on. Okay. A special edition of Latinos Who Lunch.
And this is a special episode. It's all about pigmentocracy, which in a way, we started talking about this since one of our first episodes when we talk about Brazil and the Olympic Games. So this is a continuation of that conversation with
Maria Elena Ortiz.
That's
from
right.
The Perez Art Museum in Miami. So
shout out to the museum. Shout out to Maria Elena.
Oh my gosh. So you might have heard the full interview before, but there's a clip from that interview. And then Babelito and I get into it for a little while. So enjoy the surprise episode.
Que disfruten, chicos.
Bonus. Bonus. Bonus.
Episode.
I wish I could do it like Rafa.
I can. Okay.
Enjoy. Bye.
Hi, this is Favi Fav.
And this is Babelito.
And we are
Latinos Who Lunch,
the podcast where we talk about important things like Hello.
Que show.
¿Cómo estás, Babelitex?
Como el mango.
¿Cómo es eso?
Arrugado y chupado.
¡No! Hell of a weekend, eh?
I see, güey.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, we're here today on a very special episode of Latinos Who Lunch for Untitled Art Fair in Miami, Florida.
Shout out to contemporary art.
Okay. Look at this art in a fair. That's nice. All in one place.
Cuánta belleza, cuánta belleza.
Ay, ay, ay. Okay.
Ay, qué lindo.
So today we're bringing you a special clip from Maria Elena Ortiz from the Perez Art Museum.
Boom!
In Miami. As our listeners know, I was there all summer long, sweating and walking around very slowly.
Y con mosquito bites.
With mosquito bites, beautiful. Yes. And I met some amazing people, and Maria Elena was one of them. We really got into it, and I really loved talking to her because she was real.
Yes, and she brings some amazing, amazing points.
Yes.
I can't wait for everybody to listen.
So maybe like give us a little like Back to the Future music, because we're going to go in the time machine back to this summer
in beautiful Maria Elena, because I knew that you worked here at the PAM. So first question, Maria Elena, What do you do? What do you go by?
Well, you know, if possible, I go with Maria Elena. When I first moved to the U.S., I was born and raised in Puerto Rico. I suddenly became Maria, and I hated it. I mean, in general, I hated my name to begin with when I was in Puerto Rico. It was everybody's name Maria. Like, there was like five Marias in my freaking class, and I was one of many. So the middle name becomes very important.
Yeah.
Eventually, I ended up liking it a little bit more because, you know, Maria is the virgin, and Elena is like Ellen of Troy, which is like this beautiful like woman that was with two men, so I kind of like that contradiction. And then after I was here in the U.S. for a while, I went to work in Mexico City, and suddenly there I was able to be Maria Elena again because people were like, oh, you know, they can't pronounce my name.
Yeah.
And I loved it because that's my preference. And then when I moved back here to the States to work here in Miami, people are more flexible with the language, so there's some people that can say my name the way it is, and others who just want to say it correctly because they want to be very PC about it, which I don't really care. Like, I really don't care. Yeah. Like, I actually, like, being here, I've been thinking, should I just go back to Maria sometimes? Because I don't want to feel your pain when you're trying to say my name, because yeah. I know how that feels. There's Chinese names. There's many other English names that I have a hard time, English words that I have a hard time saying. I think it's, so anyway.
Yeah, people being very extra and trying to overpronounce things, right?
Yes.
Like, people give me shit all the time because my work is in a piñata style. But depending on where I am, I'll say piñata because it's just, right? It's just faster.
Yeah.
And like my brain is in English, so I just say piñata, right? And then, like, for example, I had a conversation with somebody here in Miami, and I said piñata, even though I was speaking in English.
Yeah.
And they just kept repeating the word, like, piñata, piñata. I love the sound of that. And I was like, really? Oh, my God. Like, this is why I do it. This is why I don't say piñata sometimes, because I don't want...
Yes.
I don't want them to...
The exoticism.
To exoticize it.
Well, and I think that people forget that language is fluid. Like, language is supposed to change. I mean, I have been to Aruba a few times, and I get very surprised there with the Papiamento, which is like this merging of like four different languages.
Yeah, and when we did our lecture, Jose Diaz from the Warhol Museum was there, and he asked us a really interesting question about the word Latinx, and you're talking about the evolution of language. That word right now is I think a key word to kind of talk about.
Definitely.
What Latinx is and what that means.
Definitely. A lot of people talk about Latinx in relation to gender and like trying to kind of go beyond this feminine and masculine gender binary. I'm not that interested in that because I think that's just one part of another bigger thing. I think that the beauty about Latinx and taking away the gender is it actually approximates the term to a U.S. and English experience. Suddenly, there's no gender. There's not Latino, which is actually very much a Spanish word that disregards the female aspect of it. But you take it out of the gender, suddenly it becomes an English word in a sense.
Right.
Which speaks to what it means to be here in the United States as a person of Latin descent or Latin background or whatever you want to, however you feel.
Yeah. I know you're from Puerto Rico. You've lived in Mexico City, San Francisco. You went to school in Boston.
Yeah, Houston, Texas, as well.
Houston, Texas, Mexico.
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah.
Now you're in Miami, which is, I mean, the Latinos here are like nowhere else in the world. That's what I've realized. I kind of just want to know a little bit about you and like how you identify, or did you have to change what you identified as in different spaces in different cities?
Yes. That's an interesting question. I don't know if I can answer it. I'm just going to spit out. And maybe, I don't know, somebody will probably have an opinion.
They always do.
Yeah, and they can find me on Instagram or on Facebook, Marilene Ortiz, at Marilene, whatever. So I grew up in Puerto Rico, and I knew that I was Black when I grew up there because, you know, in Latin America, in our countries, I was going to say, there's like this nationalist construct of we are of many things. But there's also a pigmentocracy, and what I mean by that is a hierarchy of color that was very much established by the colonial powers. You can just go Google Casta paintings, and you're going to know what I'm talking about. And the pigmentocracy did not only dealt with skin tone, but also facial features, hair, Like, I, you know, at age 9, my mom took me to the hair salon to get, like, my hair straightened. So I grew up knowing that I was Black. And I had incidents, you know, in Puerto Rico that reaffirmed that experience.
Yeah.
Even though people constantly say, oh, Puerto Ricans were Black, the Taino and Spanish. So I knew that. And I also, growing up in Puerto Rico, knew that I had a Latin heritage. Well, I was maybe Latin American. Because we speak Spanish, because we got a lot of Spanish culture there. A lot of the way I see the world is also determined by the language that I speak, which my mother language is Spanish. So I knew that. Now, once I actually left the island, and of course I knew I was from the Caribbean. So, mm-hmm. you know, those were kind of the three things. And a woman. That was mm-hmm. also, I think that after Black, probably woman was the other one that came second. And mainly is because I was, you know, I grew up in a family of women, and my mom was actually like the breadwinner. So I knew what it meant, that struggle of my, and the struggle of us, you know, when we were growing up, reggaeton was happening.
Mm-hmm.
Which at that time was called something else called underground, and just fighting to be able to go to a reggaeton concert as a woman. So I knew that those two were the factors. Then when I left for the first time for the U.S., suddenly I noticed that for a lot of Latin Americans, and what I mean by Latin Americans are people that are actually born and raised in Mexico, Argentina, even Dominican Republic, they didn't see Puerto Ricans as Latins. They saw them as Americans. They saw us as, you know, people that spoke really bad English, really bad Spanish. And there's actually some truth to that. And it's not that it's bad Spanish. It's that even though you speak a lot of Spanish, you speak Spanish in the island, the language has been very anglicized. So the sentence construction, people may not, they don't realize it, but they actually, you also hear a lot of sentences that start with verb, the same way you do it in English.
Mm.
So the language, because of the English influence, have changed. But it was the first time that I felt like, oh, this is a Latin person telling me that I'm not Latin, I'm actually American. What was interesting, and that was actually an easier thing to negotiate, because all Latin Americans are very different. So if you're going to start throwing drugs at me, I can easily start throwing rocks at you.
Yeah.
You know? But I was also very captivated by who I was in the different parts of the United States. So when I was in Boston, New England, people, and I also had my hair straightened at that time. I was also actually very overweight. I was almost 300 pounds. People knew my phenotype more. They, like, you know, if I said I was Puerto Rican, they would know, okay, yeah, you could fit into that category. Although I would also get people telling me, oh, but you're not blonde. Like, you're not like J-Lo and Ricky Martin. And that was like, well, you know, no, I'm not actually, you know. And then when I was in, so people were not freaked out by my phenotype. Totally changed when I was in Texas, in San Francisco, and Mexico is another conversation. But certainly in San Francisco and in Mexico, and in Texas, which I guess was once Mexico.
Uh-huh.
And I was telling you earlier that at that time I used to have a boyfriend that was, my ex-boyfriend was Mexican-American, and we would walk into restaurants, and the server would speak to him in Spanish, and he wouldn't speak any Spanish because he grew up, he was Chicano. He was raised to denounce his language.
Mm.
And then I would start speaking in Spanish, and they would like go, they would like, what, you speak, you know, like curly hair Black woman, you speak Spanish, like, where are you from? And I would get it from Latins, and I would also get it from Blacks, African Americans. Not, you know, I think white people are like in a different category, but it's more the minorities, how I relate to the other minorities. That's what I found more interesting. And I would get from, like, I remember being in the dorms and African American friend telling me, oh, there's Black people in Puerto Rico? And I was like, yeah, I mean, don't you know that the Caribbean was like the safe market? And that was also shocking, because you start seeing also how history is being taught and who's included in that history and who isn't. Because technically, in Puerto Rico, I'm a mulatto, which means that my dad is white and my mom is Black.
Mm-hmm.
And although I am Black, you know, you look at me, you might not come to that conclusion.
I don't see color.
Yeah. But I remember being in a bus and somebody, and also another African-American person asking me about my hair. What's up with your hair? Your hair looks kind of weird. Like, are you mixed? And that's the first time, especially living in the South and in California, the first time I also experienced what it's been to be in the South of the United States, which I love the South, I have to say. But, and also the contrast between the pigmentocracy, in which in the pigmentocracy you can look white and you're white, versus in the U.S., which is like the one drop rule. If you have one drop, you are one or the other, you know?
Yeah.
And so that was intriguing. And Mexico is a very more complex situation because there, you know, you have a lot of indigenous groups. They're all very diverse, some which don't even speak Spanish.
Mm.
And you have this really European class that controls everything, or that they're in power. So the level of oppression it's more complex because there's, you know, like my ancestors that were brought up on a boat, enslaved, and going to the Americas, and then they were enslaved in another home. There's people there that were enslaved in their own home. And then, you know, imagine if somebody just walks into your house and just tells you, I'm the chief now.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, you have this crazy sibling, hyperactive teenager, also known as a U.S., kind of like having this imperialistic drive. So I'll leave that for another.
Yeah. Another segment.
Yes.
Yeah, and I'm very interested in that dynamic.
What an amazing person. Like,
Brilliant mind,
brings so many different topics. We can spend 10 episodes just talking about some of the issues that she brings up.
And if you want to hear the full interview with Maria Elena Ortiz, please go to latinoswhoLunch.com and check out episode 37. But let's get into pigmentocracy.
Yes.
I love that phrase because, you know, we talk about colorism a lot of time. We talk about racism within our own community on our podcast all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that pigmentocracy, the word pigmentocracy, because it is very specific based on, you know, the amount
like color,
blackness basically in your skin.
And that is a colonial system. And that's also important that you point that out because we tend to use the colloquium of the US.
Ooh.
And the idea of race and racism doesn't work the same in Latin America. It's not just about color. It's about a lot of things. And she brings a really important topic, the idea of casta painting. And for those of you who don't know, casta paintings were images that were created in New Spain, the Spanish territories in the Americas, more specifically what today is Mexico. And these images show the different mixture of races. And when you mix Spanish with Indian, you get mestizo, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like that, there's like 16 different categories. The farther away you are from the purity of blood, either Indian or Spanish, the weirder your name gets. So you could be called like up in the air or jump backwards. But it's all about how much pigmentation.
A wolf.
Yes, a wolf, a coyote. Even though a coyote today is something completely different.
Yeah.
Shout out to people helping other people across the border. Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And
so, okay, so these categories, people were painted and there was like, how many? Like 60 something?
Well, categories in paper in the colonial period were over 200.
Oh my God. Okay.
But on images, there were 16.
And I've been to art museums before where you see casta paintings and they're kind of laid out in a grid.
Yes.
Now, where would people go to see these, to see what they were, basically?
The two most prominent collections of colonial art that have them in the United States will be the Denver Art Museum and the Los Angeles County Museum.
Mm.
Ilona Cazzo, the curator of Los Angeles County Museum, has done an amazing job recuperating images that were thought to be lost, like completing some of the cycles that were incomplete for hundreds of years.
Yeah.
So that is a good place to look at them.
Yeah. And you know, when I was in Miami, I spent a lot of time in Little Haiti, Little Havana. And the Latinos there are different than they are in the Southwest. We spend a lot of time in Los Angeles, and most of the people there are Chicano or Mexican, right? Central American.
Yeah.
In Miami, I noticed a lot of people from South America, Cubanos, of course, Caribbean people. I did not understand. I was used to my own pigmentocracy. Mm-hmm. And when I got there, those rules were out
completely
the window.
Different, yes.
And I did not understand, like, the story that I always tell is I ran into this Guatemalan woman and I knew she was Guatemalan because I clocked her accent because I'm half Guatemalan.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, yeah, I am. But please don't tell anybody because in Miami, I identify as Colombian. Yeah.
¿Neta?
And I said, why? And she's just like, well, it's just easier. People are nicer to me.
Wow.
And that just like blew my mind
because I mean that's specific, insane. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And then going back to thinking about Casta paintings, like that's just because the colonial legacy in those places
is still alive.
Mm-hmm. And if you are from somewhere like Colombia, you are closer to the colonial history, you're closer to being Spanish, so that's looked at as higher in the caste system, which is crazy.
Yeah,
those rules are still in effect today.
Yeah, and I think people talk about the post-colonial period. It never went away. It just gets recontextualized under different institutions and under different categories, but it's the same, man.
And you know, we can talk shit about Miami, but that shit is happening in our own communities here in the Southwest. I mean, we were just in Los Angeles talking to a lot of, you know, woke Latinx people, and some people are surrounded, are in this bubble, and they don't realize that they are also participating in this system.
Yeah.
Just because they can't see past their world, you know?
Their own bubble. Rightly, they work hard to construct, but still a bubble. You know, another topic, another interesting thing, it's how the term of Latin America.
Yeah.
Because it becomes a problem, and something that we see in the art world, that they want to curate us in the same spaces as everybody else that is considered Latino. But the reality is that it's so, so different. This is why I love the art shows that are happening in LA with Pacific Standard Time.
Yeah.
They're so specific to very different areas and countries and identities and movements of art. Oh, amazing stuff.
Yeah. And you know, conversations like this with Marielena, they're important because a lot of times we tend to forget what's really going on, because, you know, it's just easier to ignore things and to not pay attention.
Yeah.
And instead of getting defensive, a lot of times it's better to listen. You know, just realize that ignoring color, ignoring race, never is going to help us.
And it's perpetuating, as you say.
Yeah. A lot of people think that, oh, it's only happening because we're talking about it all the time. No.
We have to mention
it to be able to manage it and eventually end this bullshit. And it's going to take a long time.
And it infiltrates on everything, right? It infiltrates from everything, from the way that we are segregated in neighborhoods to the way that we are curated in exhibitions. So it's important to always be thinking about and talking about these issues.
Oh my gosh. Anyways, after that, I need a drink. I gotta go. But
yes.
And as always, you can find us at latinoswholunch.com. Email us latinoswholunch@gmail.com. Please, if you have a minute, rate us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. 5 stars.
5 stars only.
Because the more reviews we have, the more visible we are. And visibility is
essential.
I'm Fabi Fav.
And this is Babelito.
Bye.
Ciao.